This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
The bill has come due.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Our reliance on foreign oil looks a lot worse when every barrel costs $137. We just got the oil tab for April, $29 billion. That's the most the U.S. has ever paid in 1 month for foreign oil. And that was with oil at $97 a barrel. April's bill drove the U.S. trade deficit to its highest level in 13 months. Usually this time of year, the price of natural gas is low. People try to lock it in for winter heating. But this year, natural gas is not only at its peak for the year, it's at its highest level ever. More from Ashley Milne-Tite.
Although it's June and already sweltering on the East Coast, natural gas prices are almost double what they were in December. That's when a lot of people are tapping natural gas supplies to heat their homes. James Williams is an energy economist with WTRG Economics. He says a fairly cold winter diminished those supplies, and then there are the power plants that often switch between natural gas and oil to operate.
There hasn't been any fuel switching to speak of because petroleum is so overpriced relative to gas that we just consumed a lot more gas and took our storage levels down to where people are wondering if we can match last year's storage levels.
And that means we could be in for an expensive winter. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Wall Street is mainly concerned with last night's comments from Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke. He made it clear inflation was the Fed's top priority now. And that could mean the Fed will raise interest rates sometime soon. So far, the Dow is down 16 points to 12,263. The NASDAQ has fallen 13, and the S&P 500 is off by 6. Big losses in Asia today. China's main index fell almost 8% after the government pulled back on credit. Hong Kong shares down 4%. In Europe, the markets are off by about 1%. We hear a lot about the growing number of uninsured people in this country, but a study out today turns our attention to something else, a dramatic rise in the number of underinsured people. Jeremy Hobson reports from Washington.
For this study, underinsured means you have insurance, but your costs aren't even close to covered. In some cases, it means you had to spend 10% of your income on out-of-pocket medical expenses. And Kathy Shane at the Commonwealth Fund says many underinsured Americans put their own health at risk.
They didn't see a doctor when sick, they didn't fill a medication, they didn't get a diagnostic test or follow-up care.
For adults aged 19 to 64, the number of underinsured jumped 60% in the last 4 years. Healthcare expert Henry Aaron at the Brookings Institution says the explanation is simple.
The underlying problem is that healthcare spending is rising very much faster than incomes of typical American workers.
Aaron says equally important is the increase in healthcare spending by employers. Higher benefit costs mean less money for salaries, so employees have less cash to shell out for healthcare. In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Mother Nature doesn't seem to care about the price of food. Corn farms in the Midwest are getting drenched with way too much rain. And in Georgia, farmers haven't seen a good shower in weeks. Yesterday, dozens of Native Americans did a rain dance on the steps of Georgia's state capitol. And lo and behold, there's a 40% chance of thunderstorms today. This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, June 10th on Marketplace.org. Congress has passed a law designed to stop terrorists from using container ships as part of an attack. But a report out of Europe this morning says that law is bad for the global trade business. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
Under the new law, every shipping container entering the US, and there are 20 million of them a year, will be scanned at the port of departure. The image will be sent to the US for checking. Congress passed the measure out of concern that terrorists might use containers like a Trojan horse. But a report by a French university out today says there's a downside. The measure, which comes into force in 2012, could delay shipments, hitting global growth without improving security. Andrew Bounds of the Financial Times.
Now is not the time, people say, when we have fears of protectionism, fears of slowdown, the credit crunch is biting. Now is not the time to put more obstructions in the way of world trade and world growth.
Opponents of the measure also complain it shifts the cost of American security onto foreign ports, but supporters argue that everyone benefits from avoiding the damage to world trade that would follow a successful seaborne terrorist attack. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Volkswagen hasn't made cars in the U.S. for two decades now. The last plant closed in 1988. But VW is trying to make a comeback. Here's Elisa Roth.
BMW, Mercedes, and Toyota already build vehicles here. It helps save on shipping costs, for one thing. Being closer to their American customers also helps them hedge against other costs, including fluctuations in currency rates. Michael Robinette studies the global car market. He says if the dollar is weak against other currencies, as it is right now, cars assembled overseas can be very expensive to sell here. That's been a big problem for VW.
They've had a lot of difficulties competing in this market given the rise of the euro vis-a-vis the U.S. dollar. And that is a major driver why they are finally deciding to locate production capacity in North America.
VW already has plants in Mexico. It even exports some cars made there back to Europe. Robinette thinks that could also happen to cars made at the new American plant. Alabama, Tennessee, and Michigan are on the shortlist for the site. VW says it'll announce the final choice in July. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
The days of using your home as an ATM are over. But people still need money to start a business, for example, or keep one going. So entrepreneurs are looking for other sources of capital. Stacey Vanek-Smith has our story.
Zev Feig founded Zensa 4 years ago.
This is our first shirt, a compression shirt. Featured in Bicycling Magazine.
And the company's doing well. It makes high-performance athletic clothing for the likes of the New York Knicks and the Boston Celtics. When he needed money to expand, Feig looked to his house. He had an excellent credit score, about $100,000 in untapped equity, and a profitable business. The bank said no.
I'm personally surprised that after 4 years of having a business that's showing tremendous growth, I can't walk into a bank and get a loan.
Sastry Ratchakonda is with research firm Discover Small Business Watch. He says as the credit crunch gets worse, equity lines are drying up.
30% of the small business owners have used their home as a source of funding. I mean, around 35% feel there has been an impact on their business because of slowdown in the housing market.
Zensa's Zev Feig is among them.
Right now we're small, but we're growing. And there's no question if we had the funding that we needed, we could be so much bigger.
Without his house to tap, Feig was forced to look elsewhere. He first turned to credit cards, then he discovered peer-to-peer lending. It's kind of like eBay for loans. Businesses post the amount they want to borrow and the interest they're willing to pay, and anyone with $50 can play venture capitalist. Prosper is the largest such site with about 700,000 members. CEO Chris Larson says his business has grown sixfold in the last 2 years.
What we're seeing now is well-qualified people that used to have no problem getting funding from lots of sources now coming to peer-to-peer lending.
Larson says the average loan on Prosper is around $6,000, and small business owners make up about a quarter of his borrowers. He says entrepreneurs like it because they get rated by Prosper, but they get to have a voice too and make a case for their business that goes beyond profit and loss.
Maybe I could put a video of the store I'm opening. I can tell about my business plan, how excited I am. I can get customers to endorse me.
Zensa's Zev Feig took out a loan on a peer-to-peer site. He says it was fast and easy. The maximum loan, though, is just $25,000. But that could change. Peer-to-peer lending is expected to be worth about $5 billion by 2010. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
Let's flash back to the year 2006. Remember the stories from the housing market? People flipping homes like pancakes, buying up condos in Florida before the cement was dry. Seems like a long time ago. But that's still what the Chinese real estate market is like now. Lisa Chow reports from Beijing.
The first thing you have to know about buying homes in China is that traditionally, buyers used to pay the full price of the house, all at once. Seriously, bags of cash on the settlement table. But young entrepreneurs here, men and women in their 20s and 30s, are starting to catch on to the whole credit thing. Jean Peng bought 3 apartments last year. She paid half in cash and borrowed the rest from the bank. Peng says it was a good investment.
Since the beginning of this year, my stocks have fallen 40%, whereas the value of my real estate has increased 30%. So I prefer to put my money in real estate.
In the last couple of years, housing prices rose so fast, more than 40% in major cities last year, it created urgency among people who may not have considered buying a home to break into the market. Wei Wei is 26 and bought his first house when he was 22.
At the time, prices were cheap. Now I won't be able to afford it.
He put 50% down in 2004. When he bought his second house a year and a half ago, he put 20% down. So many people started doing this that it made China's central bank nervous. After all, this movie is still playing out in the U.S. and Europe. So China's central bank raised interest rates 6 times last year and now requires buyers to put 40% down on second homes. And how do these young, small-time investors have so much cash on hand? For one, they have good salaries by Chinese standards. And unlike young, college-educated Americans, they don't have student loans to pay off. And there's no stigma to living with your parents, so many do, including 28-year-old Michael Wang.
I have been staying with them ever since I came back from college abroad. I'll probably stay until I get married.
He's not worried that living with mom and dad will make him appear uncool to potential mates. In China's dating world, a nice real estate portfolio makes you hotter property. In Beijing, I'm Lisa Chow for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.